Scum Fiends. Broadcasting live and worldwide tonight from Keene in the Shire, the Liberty Media capital of the world. This is the show that melts your mind and reconstructs it again, but this time with more breakdancing. Your deprogramming begins now. Regular mad scientist at the microphone, Dr. Dean, is relaxing his feet in a soothing bath of pink Himalayan sea salt, while we bring you the calming chatterbox that is live talk radio. On the other end of the tubes with me tonight is former prosecutor and current Wampus Cat, Randy England.
Good evening.
Hello, Randy. Are you safe? Have you been contacted by the government?
I am safe. I've not been contacted, but then again, that's a Sunday, so I frequently do not. Well, I suppose it's Monday here, isn't it?
That's right. Okay. Happy Monday to you.
I may be contacted later today. We'll see.
I hope not. And I am safe. I've not been contacted by the government. And last we were chatting on this program, just 1 week ago, we ended on an interesting topic. Can prisons be abolished? And I want to talk a little bit more about that because we didn't quite wrap it up. And you were telling a story of Idle Jack, a man in a fictional land who committed some crimes and was found to be so unpopular that his community, no one would serve him. And he was ostracized. His reputation was ruined. He couldn't have any credit extended to him. And you see this as sort of a solution for prisons.
Well, I wonder how much of a solution in that story. And anyone that has not read the short story, And Then There Were None by Eric Frank Russell, just Google it and go and read it. It's just a fantastic story about a truly free society. It's science fiction, but other than that, you know, it's not real sciencey. It's more anarcho-capitalist.
And you know a lot about prisons too, because you are a former prosecutor. So you sent people there, didn't you?
I did send people there, and now I go there to visit my clients. I have that creepy feeling every time I go into one. You know, what if they decide not to let me out? You know.
Do you really feel that way? Like sometimes when the door slams behind you, that it's just over?
I don't actually think it, but there's this irrational idea because, you know, when you go in, I mean, there are multiple doors, bars that clunk shut behind you as you get deeper and deeper into it. And there's no way you can avoid getting the vibe, even if you're not going to be held there if you've come in just to, say, visit a client or something. And, I mean, it's enough, just to put it this way, it's enough of a feeling that when you walk out the door and the doors clunk behind you the other way, it feels good.
Yeah, I can relate to that. You know,
even
I did
though
some
you
time
may only
in
spend a few hours. Go,
well,
I'm sorry.
I did ahead. A few months in jail and found it to be pretty isolating, really horrible, and from the second I heard that first door slam, clang, the whole situation, the whole feeling in my stomach, everything changed. It was like, that's it. You're away. And you're gone from society. You've disappeared for a little while. And I can imagine even as a visitor, you would get something of the same feeling of like, well, there's a big heavy door between me and the outside world. I don't have the power to open it, but I hope and trust that someone else will.
I'm sure it can't be anywhere near like it is for you. For me going in there, it's like going to the doctor's office with a friend. You know, it's the guy that's got the appointment that's all worried and upset. You know, you're just kind of supporting them.
Yeah, plus it depends on the jail you're going to. But I think that, you know, the whole idea of it could be replaced. We talked a lot about that last week, how it made even some of the inmates upset when I suggested that they don't belong in prison, that people don't belong in cages, that we could solve our complex social problems without this ancient form of punishment that really does no good anymore. And I think it's a real plague on society, especially in America, which has only 5% of the world's population, but it has 25% of the world's prison population. What's that? What's that all about?
That's so right. And, well, you know, the thing you said about knowing somebody, talking to somebody who believed that they deserved to be there, I get that all the time. I talk to people. I mean, sure, there's some people that say, hey, I don't belong here. You know, I mean, there's got to be. I mean, it's a normal feeling. But to have people who have been committed, you know, driving right while revoked or something, or getting caught with some drugs, and they're in prison for it, and they say, I deserve to be here.
Yeah, they call it institutionalized.
I guess so. You know, now, I do understand. I have had people say, you know, it was the thing that woke me up. I mean, to say that nothing good ever came from someone being in jail, it would be a lie. If you have a problem with drug addiction, you may end up having one thing or another thing that's that point in your life that changes everything. And there will be people who will say that came to me because they sent me to jail.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that that's the only way it could have come to them. They could have sent them to a carnival and they could have had a unique experience.
It's absolutely not the only way, and it's the most horrible way to have that epiphany in your life, to have that done to you. Even people that are strongly in favor of that, if you ask them, well, you know, if you had a son who was, you know, addicted to heroin, do you think his life would you know, be improved by going to jail, or maybe you could get him help some other way? I don't know. I mean, it's just because something good may happen, you know, when you're in there, it doesn't justify the person who puts you in there if it's the wrong thing to do to begin with. And of course, the worst likely candidate to be in a jail is somebody in a victimless crime. You know, we're talking about, you know, whether thieves need to be in a jail and that sort of thing. And that's definitely not victimless. And lots of thieves and people that do many bad things can probably be handled in a more restitution-based justice system, which is what I would like to see.
I'd like to see something focused on restitution. I'd also like to see something focused on preventative measures. Like, I've heard it theorized by some philosophers that there would be, in this libertarian vision of the future, perhaps there would be different sorts of insurance agencies, for lack of a better term, people who would insure against bad things happening to you. So, like, well, we ensure that you won't, you get flood insurance. Like, okay, well, you ensure that a flood isn't going to happen in your house. And if it does, you get some sort of compensation. Well, you can insure against murder.
Lots of people already have that. Lots of people already have insurance, right? I mean, against murder, we call it life insurance. Right. Against having your house burglarized, homeowners usually have insurance against that.
Right.
And, but in a free system, you would probably have insurance, but the insurance company would either run a security company or it would be hooked up with security companies so that, you know, they would try and catch the bad guys to get the restitution from them one way or another.
Yeah, but I think the issue today is that insurance is a four-letter word. It's become so perverted with government that the two are almost indistinguishable. It's like this fascist system of insurance where literally you're forced, if you live in America, to buy health insurance now. So, I mean,
well,
there's no free market for insurance when people are forced to buy it.
Well, you wouldn't have to have insurance to protect yourself against a burglary. You could not have it, and then instead of calling up the insurance company and say, somebody broke in, did a $200 worth of damage to my door and stole my widescreen TV, and now I'm out $1,000. Well, if you had insurance, the insurance agent would come out and write you the check for the $1,000, and you would assign your claim over to the insurance agent, and they could go look for the guy, you know, and you'd be fixed.
Now, I'm also of the belief that if there were these insurance companies competing to keep the world safe, they would also have the incentive to not write out all of these claims, right? So they want to make sure that there aren't thefts and robberies and rapes and murders that happen. They want to prevent these things from happening. So they would spend their capital trying to prevent these things, educating young people about, you know, the virtues of respecting private property and how to get ahead without stealing or wronging another. I think they would make the world a better place through competition.
Well, that would, of course, be just as much the homeowner's problem as it would be the insurance company's problem, because everybody, whether you're the guy who's insuring it or the guy whose home's being broken into and paying the insurance premiums, wants the same thing there, because right. Obviously you would get lots lower premiums if there wasn't so much crime. But the insurance companies, I'm not sure what insurance companies can do. I mean, they would know better than that. Like, you've heard of the Kansas City Patrol Experiment?
No, what is that?
Well, back in 1972, the city of Kansas City decided to see how much good police patrols were doing. So they did a test, and it was a pretty good test the way it was set up. They worked it kind of through, where they tested what was the difference between areas that got the normal police patrols, areas that got double or triple police patrols, and areas that got no police patrols. You would never see a cop unless you called for one in those areas.
Wow.
And the result of the test, cutting to the chase, is that no change in any crimes.
So why was there no change?
There was no change. Now, they didn't measure every kind of crime. They measured most crimes that most people would think of could be affected by patrols, like somebody beating up their girlfriend inside the house probably wouldn't be affected by that. But lots of crimes, you know, burglaries and some other things, quite a few crimes that conceivably would be affected by that were tracked very closely. And none of those crimes were changed at all. It had no effect. Double and triple the patrols, cut the patrols out, nothing.
I want to talk more about how we can replace prisons with something more peaceful and voluntary. But we got to step away for just a moment. Hey, can you see the sky, Randy?
If I looked out the window.
Yeah, well, there's a star show happening tonight. We'll talk about that when we return.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Anti-war, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Prisons be abolished? I think so. Randy, we agree. We just got to build this freedom future of ours. How do we do it? How do we move on to get these prisons abolished? How do we get those doors swinging open and those prisoners released?
Well, you have to go to a restitution-based system, and the first thing you would do is to get everybody who wouldn't need to be in prison for any reason that you can think of. And who could pay off the restitution on their own and be done. And of course, I think we talked last time we were on here, you get rid of half the people just by getting rid of the drug laws.
Isn't that sort of happening in California right now? I heard that they're going to re-sentence like 10,000 people who are currently locked up serving years-long sentences.
Well, that's happening, right? That's happening throughout the entire federal system, because the U.S. Sentencing Guidelines Committee came up with guidelines to move everybody down a couple levels, and they're going to get a lot of people out of federal prisons because a lot of people quickly releasable. And that's a good thing. I'm glad to see that.
Question, is it a good thing? Because I'm wondering, is it just happening because of the stresses of the system, like they can't bear any more prisoners, or there's been some philosophical shift? in sentencing and punishment.
Now you're asking whether the government has good motives in it, and I don't know. I mean, it's good for the people who are getting out.
Yeah. Okay, I can agree with that.
I think that a lot of it is driven by money. Now, it doesn't say that. If you read the new guidelines and what the committee had to say about it, you know, they're talking about, they've got all kinds of legal arguments and why it's inappropriate to be at these higher levels, and we were wrong in putting them up that high, and now we need to correct it. You know, who knows whose consumption those remarks are made for? It seems to me that money is probably involved here too, because it isn't cheap.
Hmm.
You know, to keep the prisoners in there and the prisons going.
Yeah, in a sense, that's a relief to me, Randy, because it doesn't. I mean, I would like it if it were a philosophical victory, like, oh, everyone's mind changed and they just said, let the prisoners free. But even if that's not what happened, you're right. In effect, it's better for the prisoners who have more freedom, so we can celebrate that. And we could celebrate that we don't need to lift a finger. The state is collapsing without us, without any effort. The stresses of their system are collapsing under their own weight. And that's something to celebrate when it means more freedom for peaceful people.
Now, I didn't notice that there was any reduction in the income tax due to the money that would be saved. Nothing there. I'm thinking that even when they want to save money, it's just so they can redirect it somewhere else.
Speaking of prisoners, I was recently in court, Randy, and you being a former prosecutor, I thought maybe I could get some of your ideas or thoughts on how I did.
Your parking ticket?
Yes, I had a parking ticket. Arraignment, not a trial. So the way it works is, like, you know, you get a ticket. I'm sure you know this, but for the listeners who aren't familiar, when you want to fight a parking ticket, well, at least the way it works here in Keene, New Hampshire, is you bring your ticket down to City Hall and you say, I would like a court date, please. I am not going to pay this.
Now you know that is not what happens.
What do you mean?
You know that because you've been there so many times before. But what really happens to your average Joe is that he gets a court date. He's told to be there. He wants to fight it. He walks in there thinking he's going to get a trial. I mean, he brings his witnesses. He's dressed up. He's got his notes. He thinks he's going to get a trial. It's the old hands like you that know that you're going to walk in there and they're going to say, well, this is your arraignment, not your trial date, right?
That's actually true. Yeah, the first time I went to these arraignments, I thought exactly that I was getting a trial. And then I found out, wait, this is some pre-trial hearing where we only decide one or two things, but you need me for several hours.
Like, why shouldn't you have thought that? Except the fact that they don't say anything in your ticket. You get the ticket and it says you can either, if you want a trial, you can plead not guilty, or you can plead guilty and send us the money. I mean, what are you supposed to expect when you get there? But they universally, they don't tell anybody this. It's like they get to come in, they get to make a fool out of themselves by demanding their trial on the spot, and then everyone in the courtroom can laugh at them. You know, it's just, is this a designed public humiliation or something?
I think sometimes people do get a trial on the spot. I don't know if that's possible, but sometimes if it's quick, it's just some parking ticket trial, maybe they will take it on.
Not if the witness isn't there.
Well, the judge said some pretty amazing things on the stand, and I want to get your reactions to them.
All right.
When Freedom Fiends returns.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts. Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it.
Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Hey, this is Squisscar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom's Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Meow. Worms! We're figuring out our world. What's out there in space? Well, here on Earth, we're still dealing with courtrooms and judges, and one of them, here in Keene, the infamous Judge Burke, told me that I can get a fair trial, Randy. I can get a fair trial even if there is a conflict of interest. Does that sound right to you?
Yeah, you wrote me that, and I didn't believe it, you know. So I listened to it. It wasn't even 2 minutes there, and you asked him if there was a conflict of interest, could you still get a fair trial? And he said yes,
without a blink. I mean, he didn't. There was not a breath. He just didn't even have to think about this question. Yes, of course you can get a fair trial, even if there's a conflict of interest. And what I was building up to, I asked him a few questions about who do you represent? What would your answer be if you were a judge and you were asked, who do you represent?
Well, if I was a judge, I would say what Judge Burke said. I would say, I don't represent anybody.
Why is that? Was that the right answer?
No. Here's the right question. Who do you work for?
Okay. So I'm asking the wrong question.
Yeah, because he doesn't represent anyone. He is an employee of the state.
Yes.
Salary and set up all the rules that he has to do his job by. I bet you any amount of money they take out his withholding because they're his employer, and they take out his Social Security unless he's exempt or something for some reason. But yeah, he works for the state. So, you know, if you're wanting to make a point that there's a conflict, you would say, you know, well, who do you work for? And if they said, you know, don't you work for the state? You know, you'd have to admit, well, yeah, that's who signed my check. And then, you know, your point, of course, would be, well, Mr. Prosecutor over here, he of course tells us at the beginning of the trial that he represents the people of the state of New Hampshire in this case. And then at that point, you would draw the conclusion that, well, you both have the same employer. Isn't there a conflict here? Isn't there a built-in bias? I mean, you both work for the same guys cutting each of your checks. You both work for the government. That would be your point, right?
That's exactly the point I was trying to make. And I learned this method, which, you know, arguably was not well employed, through a man named Mark Stevens, who a book was gifted to me during my victimless crime spree in 2012. I made a movie about committing victimless crimes that involved no victim, like having a dance party or filming government officials. And during the course of the crime spree, this book was given to me called Adventures in Legal Land. And it explains how, yeah, you know, there's English and then there's legalese and there's logic and then there's courtrooms. And the two are mutually exclusive. They don't, they cannot mix. Courtrooms don't make sense. They don't use logic. And the judge can pretty much do whatever he wants. It's legal land. It's like Alice in Wonderland through the rabbit hole.
It's a good point. And one, the last thing I conceded that, you know, you could make your point if you drew the right, you know, facts out about the judge, about the prosecutor in a criminal case, you know, that they're both being paid by the government. But you don't want to leave out the fact that that never works. It's just totally useless. I mean, if you have an audience that will love you for making the point, then, you know, fine. And if you're in a case that has a maximum fine of $5, like what, your parking ticket? Well, fine. You haven't got much to lose here. You know, worst case scenario might not be that bad if the judge got mad. Although your judge, you know, he took your questions in stride, I suppose.
I was amazed at how well he took those questions, Randy. I was fearful that I might be held in contempt just for asking these questions. It wouldn't be unfathomable to see that happen in another courtroom. But one of the bailiffs, anecdotally, it was told to me that one of the bailiffs commented to one of the activists who was in the courtroom that the old Judge Burke wouldn't have taken that. And it seems
the same Judge Burke that threw Ian Freeman in jail for not... Was it sitting down fast enough?
The very same, yes.
Okay, yeah. Those two, you know, just seeing, I mean, that video from years ago, I guess, which I saw years ago, and seeing it now, I kind of get the impression that your current judge has probably decided that you and him are sort of, when I say you, I mean all the activists in Keene, seem to be a permanent fixture, and there's no point in anybody getting bent out of shape here. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, he was pretty mellow in the video I saw with you, and even when he said the thing about, yes, there's a conflict of interest, I'm thinking either he didn't understand your question, you know, like maybe he just thought your question was, can I get a fair trial? And in his mind, he's going, because there is no conflict of interest. So, yes, the answer is yes. Or he was kind of answering your point in that, no, there's not a conflict of interest here. You can get a fair trial. I mean, I can't believe that he really meant to say, yes, if there's a conflict of interest, you can get a fair trial. I think that had to be some kind of a slip somewhere.
Now, is this something that I can appeal? I realize this isn't legal advice. We're not giving legal advice on this show. We're just talking about an interesting thing that happened this week. But do you think it's possible that I could preserve these quotes for appeal if I were to be found guilty of the $5 parking violation?
Well, I'm not
sure
how.
If I wanted to bring it up to the next level, I could say,
I'm not
sure
how it is in your city and county. Here in Missouri, we have in the municipal courts, and I guess that's what you're in, the only appeal to a bad verdict in a municipal court is to get what they call a trial de novo, which means a new trial.
Do the whole thing over.
Do the whole thing over. And the reason it has to be, the whole thing has to be done over, is that our city courts are not what they call courts of record. They do not transcribe the proceedings. The words that go back and forth are not recorded. And so there is nothing that could be appealed because there's no record.
Well, fortunately, in my case, I did record it.
No. You don't have, that's not an official record.
Why
not? No, I have to have a certified court reporter. And now I'm talking about where I am. I guess you can do anything you want up in New Hampshire, but the systems are surprisingly similar from place to place. And so here, if you don't like what the verdict in city court, you have to go get what they call a trial de novo over in the state court, where it will be on the record and where you can get an appeal.
Wow, that's really cool. I hope I can do that, because it's going to cost the state way more than $5. And that's one of the fun reasons why I take these things to court. It's because, like, yeah, I know it's not worth my time. Yeah, I know that I could just pay the $5 and have it be over with, and that would be easier. But I like making them work for that $5. I like having the opportunity to have all of these actors and actresses play on this stage that I get to control somewhat, and then I can record it. That's the other cool thing about doing this in New Hampshire, is that, like, if I were in New Jersey or Philadelphia, yeah, I might be able to play these games. It would cost me a little more, but I wouldn't be able to record them. I get to have all this sort of fun, and then the videos are up online within hours.
You know, and there are probably people listening to you now, even in Keene, people that know you and do not like what you and the other activists do there. And the truth is, if they're listening, they should hear me, because I'm telling them that you are doing them a tremendous favor by what you are doing, because if nobody else is keeping the government honest, you are keeping them honest. When nobody ever challenges them, they get bolder and bolder and bolder. And whenever somebody goes in there and lays down for them, they are teaching the police, they're teaching the prosecutor, they're teaching the judge that these people are easy. And whenever somebody goes in and stands up and says, you may convict me, but you're going to jump through every single hoop, that person who does that is doing everybody a favor. Even the people that hate you up there, you're doing them a favor, just because you're keeping them honest and you're training the police, training the prosecutor, training the judge. You're training the prosecutor never to bring garbage to court, because there's actually people out there that will fight it. And the same thing, you know, with the police. They don't come in with baloney, because they know they're going to be challenged. Now, some are not honest. They'll lie in that. But everybody can be trained. Cops, judges, prosecutors, you know, defendants. It doesn't matter.
I agree.
And I think you're training them in a way that benefits all of us, not just liberty people.
Hear, hear. And thanks for that, Randy. I agree. I think that's sort of working both ways. Yeah, I'm being trained a bit by my experiences with the judges and prosecutors. But similarly, the prosecutors are being trained. Last time I took a parking ticket to trial, the prosecutor said to me, you know, he called me up after announcing to everyone and doing the plea deal thing for everyone who was in court, mostly for open containers of alcohol. It's a college town. He called me up, Derek, over here. And I approached the bench, went over to this prosecutor who's going to make me a deal, or so I thought. He leans over and says, here's what I'm going to do. Are we really going to trial over a $5 parking ticket? All right, I'm going to drop this. This is a one-time thing. This isn't happening again. And he was right. You know, the next parking ticket, he didn't drop it. But I'm suspicious that it wasn't because he didn't. It wasn't because he didn't want to. It was because he couldn't. He said he didn't have the paper in hand at my arraignment. He wasn't even aware that I was supposed to be there. So, just goes to show that sometimes you can have a lot of fun in the courtroom. If you're going to do it, I encourage you to come up to Keene or come up to New Hampshire and do it with some of the other activists who have been doing it in concentration for years, and so that you're not facing a Judge Burke on day one. You know, you're facing Judge Burke on, like, year 10, and he's he's been worn away by all of these activists who he knows are, if not persistent, there's going to be a constant flow of new ones.
Yes, but you pointed out that it was a bailiff or a marshal, whatever you call him up there, that pointed out to you that the old Judge Burke wouldn't have done that. The new Judge Burke is deliberately not going to let himself be worn out.
Yeah, I have a quote about that from Henry David Thoreau. Says, the preachers and lecturers deal with men of straw as they are men of straw themselves.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Freedom Fiends. So yeah, I'm not going to jail for my $5 parking ticket. We were talking about some solutions, alternatives to prison. You came up with an interesting anecdote about how to avoid prison if you are a bully beater. How's that?
Well, you know, when we were talking about the alternatives to prison and that, and one alternative to prison that came to mind to me was a story about the fellow they called the Skidmore Bully.
Hmm.
And they've made a movie about this back in the 80s, and this happened in 1981. But the Skidmore Bully, this is a story that came out of Skidmore, Missouri, which is a little town up in northeast Missouri. And a guy named Ken McElroy was the guy they knew, you know, as the town bully. And he was apparently terrorized the entire town and lots of people. He had a quite a long criminal record. People were really deathly afraid of him. There was one guy that actually he had shot, tried to kill, seriously injured an old grocer in the town. And
where was his mother?
Well, and this guy, he was... he'd been indicted, I think, 21 times, but got convicted on shooting this poor grocer, and then the court let him out on bond, on an appeal bond, when he appealed. Now,
what?
I can tell you, I was a prosecutor. Anybody that had an assault that aggravated would never see a bond before trial, let alone after bond. No way on earth are you going to let somebody that came within an inch of killing someone out. But anyway, he's out and is out breathing threats against this guy. And finally, one day before, while the appeal was pending and this guy was out, this guy was sitting in his pickup truck right in the middle of town with his young wife there with him, and somebody in the town with a high-powered rifle took his head off through the truck window. And there were witnesses everywhere, and all the authorities, the patrol, the highway patrol, the feds, I mean, everyone investigated this case, and not one person snitched. Nobody ever. They never brought anybody to trial, and no one had the slightest doubt that there had to have been 100 people. There had to have been 50 people that witnessed this. Probably everybody in town knew who it was, and they were so afraid of this guy that whoever did it had to be a huge local hero, but nobody ever spoke. And this has been 33 years ago.
Do you think most people agreed that justice had been served, and so they just weren't concerned with the state justice?
Well, you know, everybody in the town was probably really, really relieved because they lived in fear of their lives. It was funny, you know, I spent 14 years as a prosecutor, and I always knew about this story, which was 10 years old when I first started into that when it comes to protecting the public, and that's the part of my job I was never in the least had any qualms about, and that is dangerous, violent people had to be stopped. And towns must not be terrorized by people, because there are people that will do this, particularly if the people with the guns don't have the gumption to step in and protect them. And I always thought this was kind of an object lesson for me when I was a prosecutor. You know, Randy, do your job, you know, or somebody's going to do it for you and you're going to look really bad. And of course, this reflected horribly upon, you know, lazy cops, lazy prosecutors, lazy judge? Was there corruption? How could this have gone on? You know, I mean, it just raises so many issues that every prosecutor, you know, should keep it in mind. And it also, you notice this didn't happen. Nobody was killing the drug dealer. Nobody's killing, you know, the victimless crimes. Nobody gets upset about these things. This is a guy that terrorized a town, and they just killed him.
And just an amazing story.
And the story, you know, for liberty, you know, if we get to there, is that this will happen again. It's an issue that has to be dealt with.
I've got a story of peace and conflict resolution, although it doesn't involve someone being harmed or injured. It involves the market. Yeah, there's a boycott going on in Keene at my very own store. The Porcupine Thrift Store, 101 Deals here in Keene. Oh, the haters are out. But I've learned that there are many haters who prefer peace. And the market's helping make that happen because the Porcupine Thrift Store brings good value to anyone who comes in, hater or non. This will teach the world to love one another by trading with one another. Trading ideas and trading goods. Here to trade more ideas with you, we'll be back on the Freedom Fiends.
Having outgrown childish libertarian fantasies, I now believe in worms! What is Libertarians Against Humanity? It's the only unofficial Cards Against Humanity expansion pack by libertarians, for libertarians, and against libertarians. Libertarians Against Humanity is free to play online, or join the Indiegogo campaign to get physical copies and other perks to play with friends or status you haven't defued yet. Because if we don't laugh, the status win.
Not recommended for faint heart, thin skins, or those with easily rustled jeans. Consult a physician if you experience blood pressure or laughter last longer than 4 hours.
That's libertariansagainsthumanity.com.
Freedom Fiends, we reconvene. I am Derek J. I'm safe. I have not been contacted by the government. Randy England, how are you?
I am back.
Contacted by the government?
No, I was just getting a drink of water in the kitchen.
Very good. Then we're all safe. Let's continue here. Talking about peace and conflict resolution, some interesting ways to do it. You told a story in the last segment about a man who blew another man's head off and was not convicted for that because everyone in the town thought, that's justice. We don't need any further action. Because this guy was a real bully and was terrorizing the neighborhood. Now, I don't like that method of peace and conflict resolution. I'd prefer something a little more market-based. And that's happening.
That's only because you're not scared enough yet.
I suppose so. That could be. But I live in Keene where I don't have reasons to be afraid. Not many. Not in fear for my life. But I work at a new thrift store that has opened up. I told the story about this last week. Some people who moved to New Hampshire for more freedom decided that they are going to go into business for themselves, that entrepreneurial spirit, open up a store and sell things to people. And hopefully that will bring value to people in the community and the people who own the store, and it will be a win-win situation. Well, there are some haters, not surprisingly, who say, we don't like you coming, moving into our place and doing your things. So they're having a boycott. What I really like about this is that it's a use of the market. A boycott is keeping capital from capitalists, right? And so if you're some socialist or you're someone who opposes the idea of private property or property ownership or making profit through capitalism, but you support a boycott, then I think you've gotten confused somewhere along the line. Wouldn't you say, Randy?
Well, of course you would, because I'm confused.
Well, you can't use money to make your point and oppose capitalism, right? Like, you're using capitalism to make a point against it.
Oh, I thought that, you know, some people would just do that because they were mean.
Yeah, But they're still using capitalism. It's one way to be mean.
Well, that's true, but they're using maybe the only thing that they have. I mean, I don't know why. I guess there's something inconsistent about that. But what if the person who was trying to boycott you was a capitalist? Would that be
different? Then that would be consistent. That would be philosophically consistent. It just so happens that they're not. And interestingly, so I told the story last week that there's one guy near the jail who doesn't like some of the activists being on his property protesting the things that the jail does. Well, he came into the thrift store and was like, hey, no hard feelings. Let me buy a vacuum. Let me buy some stuff. And, you know, just wanted to make peace and did it in this really cool way of, you know, exchanging value for value. Well, that's continued to happen this week as we haven't done any advertising. Today was the first time we did advertising, but we'd have crazy business all week just from word of mouth or people seeing the store on the side of the street and from these haters and non-hater groups, people who are saying, oh, I heard there are some people out there who oppose you, so I wanted to come here and spend some money and show my support. I just think that is so cool that people will put their money where their mouth is and send a message. Money talks.
You probably come out ahead on that because more people will act on wanting to help and don't like that negative thing. You know, particularly, you know, it's one thing. Like I don't go into for boycotting businesses because of who works there. I tend to try and limit my boycotts to businesses that are doing things that I don't like.
Yeah, I like the idea of a boycott, supporting things that supporting businesses that are doing things you do like.
Well, yeah, and I think that there are, you know, I may not be the only person, you know, that feels that way and kind of feel that some boycotts are maybe trivial in that, and that will encourage me to come to your store because I don't even they have every right to boycott you, but if I don't think it's a fair boycott, I'm going to show up and support you. And people are doing that, apparently.
Well, I just want to point out to the good people out there, my friends and lovers who are socialists, communists, or whatever collectivist stripe they may paint themselves, you're using capitalism when you engage in a boycott or a bycott. And by all means, go ahead, do it. Yes, it's a powerful way to send a message. But just recognize that you're using capitalism when you do it. That's all I want to say, and it's a victory. I think we can see more peace and conflict resolution coming through bringing value to our neighbors than by guns or violence. Yay! We don't need guns and violence to solve complex social problems. Hey, speaking of complex social problems, this happened this week. There's a man who achieved something remarkable. Not just one man, but a team of men and women who landed a robot on a comet 300 million miles away. Is that right?
I think that's right. It was
holy moly.
It was a far away.
Yeah. And this amazing achievement has been somewhat shadowed by the presentation style of the announcement of this achievement. What's the story on that, Randy? Have you heard?
You mean that people, there was a huge criticism because he was wearing a shirt that had,
women male in bathing
suits and things like that
yes.
on it. That would be considered sexist, I guess.
Yeah, there are all of these. Well, first, I don't want to be like all the other media outlets who are focusing on this Dr. Matt Taylor and his loud shirt. Screaming over his accomplishments. I want to talk about his accomplishments because I think that's what everyone's missing out on.
Well, you mean landing on the comet.
Yeah, and he's not the only one. He's with a team of people. But it's all part of figuring out our world. And I think that's something that needs to be encouraged. I don't see this space race excitement that I see in movies from the 60s or people who want to explore space and learn about the origins of the universe and where life came from. I mean, if we're going to figure out some of these questions that have been plaguing humanity since the beginning of time, we're going to need science and technology to dig up things on comets 300 million miles away. And here's a guy who's doing it. People want to shout him down for it. I'm just amazed at how petty some people can be when we're talking about something huge here, like the origin of the universe.
Was there an article, though, that said that the attack on him was a spoof, though?
Well, some people think that... yes. Okay, so there's an article from Breitbart who claimed that it was a brilliant anti-feminist spoof, which claimed that the scientist's shirt was sexist. But I think this is more a tongue-in-cheek article from Breitbart than anything, because it wasn't a spoof.
Oh, that's such a disappointment, because that the whole thing would become just completely, completely delicious if it were a spoof, because it ends with this brilliant scientist crying on television, apologizing for his horrifying conduct. He said, "I made a big mistake and I offended many people. I'm very sorry about this." I mean, I wanted to just cringe when I saw him doing that. I mean, even if he didn't mean to offend anyone, and he did, I mean, the whole act of, you know, acting like, yeah, I lynch somebody or something was just ridiculous. He could have said, "Oh, sorry, you know, tough luck, you know, next time." I mean, it was just really crazy. Yeah. I'd love to do a spoof. I'd love to do a spoof of, you know, have some guy that looked like a trucker, 18-wheeler trucker, you know, with his belly hanging over his belt and apologizing, you know, for those two chrome, you know, the seated woman silhouettes back on the mud flaps in the back, you know, and have him start crying. I mean, that would be just precious.
Yeah, oh, I'm so sorry, objectifying you know, women.
Or have somebody apologizing for truck nuts, you know. I mean, oh, I shouldn't have said that. But anyway.
You know, Reason.com's Nick Gillespie put it best, I think, in this article titled, "A Philly Lander, One Small Step for Science, One Giant Sexist Shirt for Mankind."
There you go.
So after landing the spacecraft Philae on a comet 300 million miles away, the real issue seems to be what one of the people responsible, Matt Taylor, was wearing at the press conference announcing the achievement. Among the negative comments, no women are totally welcome in our community. Just ask the dude in this shirt. And I don't care what scientists wear, but a shirt featuring women in lingerie isn't appropriate for a broadcast if you care about women in STEM. And STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. So do you agree with those statements, Randy? What do you think?
It's just overblown. I mean, I'm sure there's someone out there that is offended by it, but it's I just don't think it's a big deal. I don't.
So here's some fun facts. The shirt, yeah, which does feature some scantily clad women who might be wearing leather and holding guns. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yes, some were holding guns, weren't they?
Yeah. It was made for him by a close friend who is a woman. She had this to say: "Dr. Matt Taylor is an amazing, kind, loving, and sensitive person. I never expected him to wear my gift to such a big event and was surprised and deeply moved that he did. I made the shirt for his birthday last month, as I make clothes just as a hobby, and he asked if I would make him one. He's a close and loved friend, so I did it as a birthday present. And everyone's entitled to their opinion, and having worked with people and events for a long time, I've certainly learned that you're never going to please everyone. I'm so proud of Matt and his achievements, and the fact that he is an interesting and very brave person who did what he did with the very sweet gesture he made towards my gift, and to wear it with his individuality, with pride." And that's really something worth celebrating.
And then he came on TV and just flushed it all down the drain.
Unfortunately, he did, and we'll talk about that. But I think it's worth celebrating our uniqueness. And that's what Matt was doing. I think this story isn't over. There's still a chance for him to redeem himself.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Now that the elections are over and liberty has slipped even further away, it's time to try yet another political organization. Campaign for a Longer Leash is a nonpartisan group of pups and dogs dedicated to fighting for longer leashes for all. We're not talking about no leashes, that would be catarchy. We just want the limited leash that the Hounding Fathers promised us. As Bone Barklin once said, a longer leash if you can keep it, ma'am. For more info, go to facebook.com/campaignforalongerleash.
Meow, 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 meow. The preachers and lecturers deal with men of straw, as they are men of straw themselves. Why a free-spoken man of sound lungs cannot draw a long breath without causing your rotten institutions to come toppling down by the vacuum he makes. Your church is a baby house made of blocks, and so of the state. That's from Henry David Thoreau. Henry David Thoreau. You know, I ended one of these segments on a quote, beginning with that one by Henry David Thoreau in his writing, I to Myself. And I left it without its punchline. It concludes, the church, the state, the school, the magazine, think they are liberal and free. It is the freedom of a prison yard. And I think that's relevant to the conversation we had earlier and the conversation we're having now about the people who cheer their freedom. They have the freedom of a prison yard, that they don't have the freedom to critically think or to
I didn't get the part about the magazine. What was
the magazine? There's nothing. I think he's just talking about popular magazines. I mean, the day in Henry David Thoreau's time, what was around? I mean, were there even trashy magazines to read?
Yeah. Well, I was thinking, though, he was kind of mixing his apples and oranges, because he had school and the state, which I have to agree are very much alike in terms of being prison-like, because there's nothing voluntary about it. At least I assume there wasn't. But then you have the magazines, which I guess have some sort of tyranny, I guess, and the churches. But, of course, they're voluntary. And I don't like it when those get put together.
Yeah, because, you know, that's true. I took a pot shot at the church and the state by reading that quote at the beginning. But I think Henry David Thoreau's wrong on that one, grouping the church and the state. You're right. One is voluntary, the other is not. So,
and the magazine. I mean, he probably felt persecuted by some magazine somewhere and, you know, threw that in there. And he was probably mad at some church, too.
Well, he might be talking about, like, the magazines of today, the blog sites that are screaming about this man's shirt. You know, screaming that, oh my gosh, this man who committed one of the most amazing achievements in the history of mankind, in my opinion. I mean, navigating a robot 300 million miles away after 10 years of floating through space and having it collect samples to analyze and send back to Earth so that we can learn about the origins of the universe, and people are focused on what this man wore to his announcement, saying, you know, oh, that puts down women? Are you kidding me?
Although we should probably be careful, because our Americanness is showing here.
Why?
In that, in America, we might criticize people who would get after him about that shirt, but we would never prosecute them. Are these guys in Europe? I mean,
I don't know.
You know how crazy some countries are with what they call hate speech?
Oh, good point. No, you know,
I don't think he was that guy. I don't know what he was doing, and I was criticizing him earlier too. And I'll apologize if I was wrong about this. I won't cry, but I'll apologize that maybe he had to go through that whole stupid crying and tearing up on TV act to avoid criminal charges.
That is really interesting to consider. I never thought about that. But no, I don't think so. I think he's an American. Yeah, it's a European space flight, the Rosetta thing.
But where was he when he said it?
Oh, I don't know. That is an interesting question. We'll have to get to the bottom of that. The Rosetta spacecraft is just an amazing thing. The fact that it can collect these data samples and send them back 300 million miles after 10 years 8 months and 14 days in space.
They can send them back, really come back.
Well, I don't think they send the samples themselves. They just analyze them and then they send the data back. Yeah,
well, that's pretty cool by itself.
Yeah, I mean, so first of all, I think it's really insulting to women to say that women will be turned away from science, technology, engineering, or mathematics. Like, oh, I'm a young girl who's interested in mathematics, but here's a man on TV who's wearing an ugly shirt, so now I'm not going to be interested in science and mathematics. That's really insulting to women to say that they could be so easily swayed against studying the subject of their passions just because a man wears an ugly shirt. Freedom Fiends.
Worms.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Do you believe in free speech? Jay Raven had her True Shives YouTube channel taken down. We believe this censorship was wrong, and we believe the channel is a clear example of free speech. Many people are bullied on the internet, but Jay Raven actually stood up to the bullying. She has filed a self-defense lawsuit against the individuals who took down the channel. The outcome of this suit could be very important to the future of free speech. Learn more at TrueShibes.com. That's Tango, Romeo, Uniform, Sierra, Hotel, India, Bravo, Echo, Sierra.com. TrueShibes.com.
Worms, worms. Welcome back, Freedom Fiends. You know, there's a meteor shower happening right now. Yeah, if you look out your window up at the night sky and it's a clear enough night, you will be able to see the Leonid meteor shower. So look up at the night sky. Explore space with your eyes. You know, it's a great big universe. We're so tiny. We're on this ball of water and dirt. And then up there, all those stars and space. There's so much we need to learn about it. And we're learning about what's going on down here below. We're learning what's going on outside. And there's more I want to say about this young scientist who was wearing a loud shirt and everyone's more focused on his shirt than his accomplishments, Randy.
Yes.
This is a major scientific achievement. And we can learn a lot about the origins of life through exploring the chemical components on these comets. You know, comets contain water and ice, and so those are some of the components needed for life. It's theorized by some that comets bombarding Earth could be responsible for the creation of life on Earth, and so we need to get to the bottom of this. I know I'm curious about where life came from, and if
you
science
mean the
can provide
creation
an answer
of life, or the comet was just sort of the Uber of the universe.
I don't know, but I need to learn more. I need to gather more evidence so that I can draw conclusions. And this is all part of that scientific exploration. of learning about our universe and about how the world works. So I think it's exciting that this man set so much of his time and energy, dedicated it to this one scientific exploration. And I just want more people to be safe to explore this idea and not feel fear that they're going to be ripped apart for the clothes that they wear. I mean, isn't it ironic that a group of people, like, I hesitate to use the word feminists, because they're really just whiners. Like, I know feminists, or feminism, the definition is supposed to be for equality among the sexes. And this doesn't sound like equality to me. This sounds like a double standard, because if they were picking on a woman for what she was wearing instead of her scientific achievements, everyone would be calling them sexists. Wouldn't they? If there was some woman up there and she just landed a robot up on a comet, and everyone was saying, can you believe the dress she wore? My goodness, how low cut, or how ugly, or whatever they would say. Or what if it had a bunch of half-naked men on it with holding guns or purses, or who cares? You know, whatever it had. I think it's a double standard.
I expect there are probably plenty of women that would call themselves feminists that wouldn't want to come after this guy with a 10-foot pole, but I would agree that whoever would criticize them would be definitely some sort of feminist.
I don't want to create division there.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, whoever was doing this, if it wasn't a joke, you know, is way over the top. And who knows? Maybe it was some shrieking man haters that even did it. And even they knew it was over the top and that it was a joke, and they were sitting around laughing drunk when they came up with the idea. I don't know.
It's such a perverted and loaded term now, the word feminist. And I always meant it to be something positive, equality among the sexes, which I am for. I want to
put down that idea, because there's plenty of women that call themselves feminists that, you know, that are in with me on lots and lots of things, but they wouldn't be in with me on this. I'm sure whoever came up with this, I'm even thinking, you know, maybe these women, they're sitting around drinking, having fun, having a good time, and they not only, you know, came up with the idea and thought it would be a hoot, but I mean, if they were really smart and they didn't have to see into the future that well, maybe they were even laughing, going, you know, I bet if we do this, we could probably even get this guy to apologize on TV. And then somebody else goes, huh, we can probably get him to apologize and cry on TV. I mean, the whole thing could be a huge joke on everybody, and especially on this guy.
That's an interesting theory.
Even though they were doing it seriously, you know, I mean, at some point, even crazy people, lunatics, know that their ideas will be perceived as insane. You know, I mean, there's plenty of people that go to work every day and they're as crazy as they can be, and yet they're able to pull it off, and at work they act normal.
You know, you theorize that it may be a group of man haters who did this. Well, that may be true, but
they were still having fun, though. I mean, they knew they were committing a joke.
Well, according to Breitbart, the circus was fueled by far left bloggers such as The Verge's Chris Plant, formerly a co-founder of a games news site. And Plant was responsible for the post about Taylor's shirt that kickstarted the absurd spectacle that followed. His post was titled, quote, I don't care if you landed a spacecraft on a comet, your shirt is sexist and ostracizing. So this from a tech writer.
Ostracizing who, I wonder?
Well, he's apparently claiming that it ostracizes women by painting them in some sexist light, you know, that, I don't know, by wearing this shirt, it's offensive and it's going to steer women away from technology or mathematics. I think that's insulting to women, as I explained earlier. But the reason this really gets to me, Randy, is because I care about equality among the sexes. That's something I want. I want to work towards a world where we do have that. Equality of equal treatment, equal rights.
But trivialities trivialize that.
Yes, they do. And I think the the confusion that's happened here is because the world or culture doesn't yet recognize the difference between coercive actions and non-coercive actions. So if this man were up on stage hitting a woman or making a joke about domestic violence, everyone would be right to call him out for it. They would say, that's horrible and wrong, and yes, you know, this is going to discourage people from wanting to associate with you. Because those are coercive actions that involve initiations of violence. But wearing a shirt is not coercive. You don't like someone's shirt. I mean, you could put your hand in front of the screen. Problem solved. It disappears from your world. It's not like it affects you after the shirt goes away. Or, you know, it doesn't leave a bruise. It doesn't cause you to lose any money. It has no net effect. And so I think the important distinction is now, coercive actions or non-coercive actions.
Can we agree that it was a pretty ugly shirt?
No, I actually don't think it was. I think it's cool. I want people to let their freak flag fly. So whatever. I wish people would dress more crazy.
Now,
I wish
people would... You weren't wearing a shirt like that when you went into court now.
That's true. I dress the part. I try and dress the part every day. Okay. You know, you dress for the weather, for your environment. You know, and some mad scientist people, it seems like this Matt Taylor guy, he's the kind of absent-minded mad scientist who can't parallel park his car, but can park a robot on a comet 300 million miles away. So I have a feeling he doesn't give much thought to what shirt he picks out for the day. He just sort of, oh, this has lots of pretty colors, or this has something pretty on it, so I'll wear that.
Well, he was probably, I mean, he might, even not knowing what he was doing, he probably was just having fun. I mean, he wouldn't have cried about it on TV if he'd have thought it through, but
we don't know if his tears were real, though.
Oh, another layer.
Yeah, what if he was just faking it so that he could move on with his life?
This is just like peeling an onion. Maybe we should move on.
Well, hey, one way we could determine if he's lying or not is by hooking him up to a polygraph.
Yes.
But that's going to be a problem because the polygraph.com owner was recently indicted.
Yeah. I don't know if we have a whole lot of time to get into it, but the story on Ars Technica is there's this former police officer. And unfortunately, all the victims in this case, I don't have good victims to make you feel sorry for, because the people who are being hurt by this is a former cop. And if he turns out to either snitch on all the people that were his customers, or if they got all of his customers' names from his records when they searched his house, then they're all people that have federal jobs. So neither one of these bunches are like as sympathetic as much of the audience would like. But let's just pretend like they're being treated badly. This guy's been indicted for a bunch of counts because he was teaching people to beat the federal polygraph.
Awesome.
And, you know, and actually what he's charged with is basically stealing or helping people to steal, because if you help somebody pass a polygraph and they pass a polygraph that wouldn't have got the job, then you're committing fraud and you're stealing from the federal government, because the federal government will part with a paycheck when these people come in and do their jobs.
Okay.
And if you hadn't helped these people pass the polygraph, they would have never had a chance to steal from the government. That's the whole thing.
Wow.
I mean, if you're on the jury in this case, you're going to have to wrap your arms real wide around this thing. Basically, what it boils down to is helping somebody lie to the government, which, and I don't like, you know, generally don't approve of lying, but, you know, I mean, the government, I mean, they're allowed to lie to you. I mean, they literally, what this guy did with a few individuals, the federal government mandates that every state do with police officers being trained. You must be taught to lie effectively, only in the place, you know, in limited circumstances. But I'd say a polygraph is a very limited circumstance. The one thing I really love about this thing, though, is that isn't this kind of an admission that polygraphs are no good? I mean, polygraphs really, they're not that reliable to begin with. And then if you if you have some guy that can give somebody some lessons and they know what to do, they're even less reliable. I mean, the government, I mean, a normal human being, you know, would say, you know, we were using this in employment, but like we knew at the start they weren't 100% good and they make mistakes. And now people are learning how to beat them. Would a normal person, like with a brain in their head, just stop using this invasive thing? I mean, don't people have a right to the thoughts in their own heads? This thing just gets crazy after a while.
Hey, if a man came to your door and demanded to know where your children are so that he could cut them into pieces with an axe, I think it would be the right thing to do to lie. Sometimes, well, lying is the right thing to do. Lying to the government, sometimes the right thing to do also.
And there could be a federal indictment.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Meow, meow, meow. Worms, worms. Yeah. We're watching the meteor shower here as we're broadcasting these words into space. And we're here. Redemption in the third act. This is the final segment of the show where we bring it home and calm the hamster in your brain. So we're talking about Randy England's story of a man who beat the polygraph test, the lie detector test, and then he taught others to do the same. The problem is he got indicted for teaching people how to lie to the government.
And the government can't stand that. They can't stand. They think that they have to control everything. Like they have to control if a polygraph is no good, well, they can pass a law and make it good. Or, you know, if encryption is too good and they can't listen in, well, maybe they can pass a law to make that particular thing illegal or find a way around it. They won't recognize, you know, that there are private spheres. Recently, my almost 1-year-old grandson came to visit and he's a baby. And, you know, when I would take something away that he shouldn't have. What does it? He'd fly into a rage. He was just really mad until I could get him to trick him into looking at something else or sticks a bottle in his mouth. But as he got so mad, I said to myself, I said, you know, a baby, if an adult was as angry as he is right now, he'd kill me. You know? But babies, they don't have that kind of power. And then, fortunately, they get civilized before they can exercise it. And by the time they're big enough to hurt somebody, they won't do it anymore. And the government, and this is, it's scary to think about it. The government is just like an infant. They're like a baby, only they have unlimited power. You know, the adage with Lord Acton, you know, power tends to corrupt. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. And our government is in love with absolute power. They cannot help hating anything that they can't control. The fact that our own thoughts are private, that's hateful to them. That our communications can be kept private, they hate that. And this thing with the polygraph, it's the same thing. There's so many other things. Like, you know, if you're a convicted felon, like you wrote bad checks, it's against the law for you to possess a body armor because they have a right when they shoot you for you to fall dead, darn it. I mean, they have to control everything. Whatever they want, they think they can just pass a law and just make the whole world comply with them. I mean, it's pathological. It's a sick fantasy and they won't let go of it. What's wrong with them? The only hope I think we have is that it really is an illusion and it won't last and governments don't last. The only problem is if another government takes its place, which seems to happen, they all have the same fantasy that the more power they get, the more they think they should control. There should be nothing out there. I mean, if that was our you know, I'm surprised sometimes they don't pass a law, you know, ordering, you know, that spaceship to come back from the comet or something, if that's what they wanted. I guess in their hearts, they know they can't have everything. But when it comes to us, they think they can.
It is pretty remarkable. And when you bring up the example of a baby who has no empathy, for example, and would, if it had the power, perhaps kill another human being so that it could get its rattle back.
Or, yes.
Something silly. You know, I think you've hit on something important that we can all take away. It's that the development of empathy seems to be one of the major solutions to building a free and peaceful future.
And the government cannot have it.
Yeah, that's right. The people in government, who are just, they're just people. They suffer from a lack of empathy. Perhaps. I'm speculating, but
together, it would seem to fit the bill. Individuals might, but as a unit, the government cannot have it.
So let's work on building more empathy in this world. How do you exercise that with your youngster? I guess you just teach them throughout their lives.
Well, it happens over time. I don't know. My wife and I, we raised four kids, and none of them have come anywhere near close to killing anybody. So it's doable. People do it everywhere.
Good. Well, I hope you reach out to your friends and neighbors, help extend that empathy, and I hope you're looking up at the skies tonight, remembering how small we are and how big the world is. The state isn't big, though. Albert Einstein said, the state was made for man, not man for the state.
Well, I like him even more now. Worms.
Worms. A perfect ending to a very scientific episode. We should conclude with Albert Einstein and Matt Taylor in his ugly shirt, which the internet will never forget. Well, I hope we've calmed the hamster in your brain tonight. Remember to reach out and empathize with your fellow man. It's the only way for peace.